Thank you very much again for joining us in this week-long dialogue. It's a personal pleasure for me to continue a dialogue that we began in Vancouver in 2006. My name is Tony Phillips, and I'm a neuroscientist, but I have a great and deep interest in your work, and it's an honor to be here today to moderate this session. As you'll see from the program, what we're doing today is we're taking your advice once again and showing you how we have taken the appeal that you've made for programs that deal with educating the heart and how we've transformed them into active programs. We have some wonderful success stories to share with you today. And so this is a practical demonstration of the wisdom of your words put into action. I'll begin by giving you an overview of the three presentations. We're going to have a brief overview of social emotional learning as it's applied to education from your dear friend Kim Sonia Reichel. And then we're going to move on to some other practitioners who've been very successful in the Montreal area. Another friend, Sophie Langry and Tara Wilkie, will be speaking about their work. We keep that quiet. And then the third presenter after tea will be Joy Knox, who is going to present on her work from Emory University. So we're going to begin with Kim's presentation.
Good morning. Sound?
Yeah, it's on.
It's on? Is it on? Oh, great. Okay. Good morning, Your Holiness. It's an honor to be here with you and an honor to be invited by the Mind and Life to be part of this session. I'm going to be talking about growing, educating the heart. And as you can see up here, I'm going to be talking about it around the world. And I began as a teacher. I'm a scientist now. So as you say, I'm 50% scientist, I'm 50% teacher. And I have been doing work in the area of social and emotional learning for almost 30 years, really working about how do we find ways to educate the hearts of children through social and emotional learning, which involves managing emotions, showing empathy for others, solving problems peacefully, behaving ethically. And I'm going to be sharing with you some of the science and also how it's grown around the world. So first, let me begin by telling you about a recent research study looking at social and emotional learning. And what they did is they looked at a group of researchers from this CASEL, the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning, looked at a number of different studies, 213 studies with 270,000 students. And what they wanted to know, do children who are in social and emotional learning programs in their classrooms differ from those children who do not? And what they found was remarkable. They found that those children in these programs not only improved in their social and emotional skills, showing empathy, showing concern for others, they also increased in their kind behaviors, in their academic achievement or their grades, and they decreased in aggression as well as in emotional distress. And so the research is really now going around the world showing that when you educate the heart, it doesn't interfere with academic achievement. It actually helps students do better. They're more likely to graduate from high school, earn a college degree, and enter as citizens into our world. So the evidence is very strong right now. And so what that has led to is the growth of this around the world. And as you see here, there are many countries, 34 countries around the world who are doing SEL programs, social and emotional learning, secular ethics, educating the heart of children in many countries. And as you see here, India is in this picture as well. But one place where this really has been happening, and that's through this Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning, is the United States. And that is some place where we've seen the growth. In 2011, there were just a few states. And as Dan Goleman said yesterday, Illinois was one of the first ones to develop standards. As you see, it's grown to, in 2013, more states, 2015, and 2017, We now have 50% of the states in the U.S. who are implicitly doing social and emotional learning in their learning standards. So what it means that at the level of policy, the policymakers are saying, in addition to teaching reading, writing, math, science, students are also learning how to manage their emotions, how to get along with others. And this has ended up reaching 1.5 million teachers, and 25 million students are having social and emotional learning programs. So remarkable that it's really growing and listening to that. Now in Canada, which you have been to a few times, you are an honorary citizen of Canada.
Yeah, yes.
We love that. We, as you see across Canada, and you'll be hearing from Sophie and Tira in just a little bit, we've really been growing social and emotional learning. But one place, British Columbia, which you've been to many times, is particularly fertile ground. It's very dark green because we've done a lot there. And what we have that went into legislation in our policy last year is a focus on new competencies. So they are now having these core competencies and this new education curriculum for children from when they enter 5 till 18. We focus on a thinking competency. They learn critical thinking. They learn creative thinking, communication. But also, we now have educating the heart. It's called personal and social competency. Positive personal and cultural identity, which, by the way, actually includes a focus on shared humanity and that we are all the same. We also have personal awareness and responsibility, which is about empathy and thinking about others, and social responsibility, which also includes a focus on caring for community and the environment. So really, you know, as yesterday you were talking about climate change, that young children now are learning how do we care for our environment. So this is really remarkable of what's been happening in British Columbia. We've made great strides, but it hasn't been easy, and it's taken a long time, about 15 years, really, of working hard. We have focused on three dimensions of social and emotional learning, teaching students, but we also need to help the educators with their own emotional well-being. That's important, and creating a loving and caring and nurturing environment. All three combined are what make up social and emotional learning. So what have been the five forces for change in British Columbia? If I had to tell you, what was the recipe? What were the ingredients? And I have five. One is policy change. We have this at the policy level. It's saying supported by the legislation getting into the curriculum. We also, and this was actually inspired by you, have been putting it into teacher preparation. Now, when you're learning to be a teacher, you get courses on educating the heart. We also have assessment. We have ways at which we could monitor how children are doing in their well-being and in their. And this is so critical because one common phrase that's said in education, if it's not assessed, it's not addressed, that you need to have that. We also have had science. We have done a number of research studies in British Columbia, and the science has been very powerful in convincing people who might be reluctant.
Social emotional learning.
No. Yeah, of social and emotional learning. So we've done research studies, and I'll share with you in a minute what those are. And we have it in classrooms. So one thing that we have found, in order for it to work, teachers need to be supported in classrooms, not just to learn how to do these programs, but to have others support them, from school leaders to everyone who can buy into that. So I'm going to tell you just briefly about one of the programs that have been really used quite a lot in British Columbia. It's called Mind Up, and it's a social and emotional learning program.
Let me say, it seems to me that person, the student, showing the missing part.
Yes, his last is tooth. Yes, this is a social and emotional learning program that is teaching educating the heart. So it's social and emotional learning, but the children also learn about their brain. They learn neuroscience. And they also, it incorporates something called positive psychology. So they practice gratitude, acts of kindness. So for instance, one of the lessons, the children have to write down a list of kind acts they want to do, or that what they have to go and do kind acts and come back and write down what they did and then reflect about how did it feel when you were doing that kind act. How did you think the other person felt when you were doing that? And actually, the person who wrote the curriculum is right here, sitting back there, named Molly Stewart Lawler. So she's the one who wrote the curriculum on Mind Up. And so the question now, though, if we've been using it, thousands of teachers have been trained. It's in classrooms around the world, and particularly in British Columbia. And we've done science. We want to know, do those children who get this program, do they differ from children who do not get it? And we've looked at things like attention, cognitive control. We've even collected their saliva to look at their cortisol to see how stressed they are. And what we found...
No, the stress level there.
A stress hormone. And what we found is that children who receive the Mind Up program increase in their ability to attend and inhibit impulses, and they also decrease in their stress. But we've also found that they, one of the core practices of Mind Up is attentive listening and mindfulness, where they do a core practice of brain breaks. They call them brain breaks, where the children take a moment and breathe and pause. And this is a group of children out in the garden in their school doing mindful listening, where they're listening for all the sounds in the garden. And paying attention in the present moment. And they do this 3 times a day in their classrooms. Now, what we found is also children decrease in their depression, their depressive symptoms. But one thing I think you'll really like is we also found that they become kinder. They increase in their ability to share with others, be seen as trustworthy, be helpful, and taking others' views. Now, what's interesting here is you'll see the white lines are those children who did not have the program, and they often become decrease in pro-social behaviors. Which is concerning, because what it tells us, when the kids who do not get something actually get worse, and we need to have something intentionally in the classroom to educate the heart is so critical. Now, one thing that we do when we get children to be in our studies, we say that they're our teachers, that we need to learn from them. And we actually ask them to be scientists with us. And we tell them about the research. We tell them why we're collecting their cortisol. And we then they become part of the research study. And in fact, and I brought one for you here, is we give them a water bottle that says, Honorary UBC, University of British Columbia Research Scientist. And I brought one for you. You're not just an honorary citizen of Canada, you're now an honorary research scientist at the University of British Columbia. But one thing I want to say is that you might not know is that you are actually another force for change in British Columbia. I said the reason what we've had such success is policy, teacher prep, but it's also you.
Oh, yes.
You have visited British Columbia, Canada 4 times in the past 14 years. And what happens before you come with your message, we prepare. We bring teachers and students together. And while you're there, there's a lot of interest in how do we do this. But after you leave, it continues. There's so much that happens. And we really have made such changes in British Columbia. And really, I want to thank you for being such a wonderful force for good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We're going to just rearrange the chairs for one moment so the next two speakers can sit next to you. Sophie? Okay, this is a tight, wonderful. Go ahead.
I'm going to.
Yeah, you're going by here. There we are. Yotar. Okay. So we're going to continue with this theme of success in the classroom. And our next two presenters, whom you know, as you mentioned earlier, Sophie Langry and her dear friend Tara Wilkie, have been working together now for over 10 years, and they've created an institute, the Institute of Social and Emotional Education in Montreal. And then they've been working also in conjunction with the Department of Education in that province, and they have some very impressive success stories to share with all of us today. So I'll ask Sophie to begin, and then Tara will follow on.
Thank you. Your Holiness, I'm so happy to be here today. I'm quite humbled, too. Normally, I'm sitting with the guests. I've been doing so for 14 years. And thanks to what I've learned at Mind and Life, and thanks to your vision, we have been teaching secular ethics based on a solid social-emotional learning framework. And I would be very grateful if you could share some insights and your ideas with us at the end of this presentation.
I'm very honored and humbled. Hi. I'm very... Thank you. I'm also very honored to be with you today and to be part of this Mind and Life dialogue talking about science and education and secular ethics. Sophie and I, as you mentioned, have been teaching secular ethics, our version of secular ethics in social emotional learning for the past 10 years, but we're involved not only in the classroom, but also we're involved in teacher training. We've been very lucky to work with students ages 5 to 18, and we're in the classroom every week. Ooh. We've also been lucky to be teaching in Canada and also in Ladakh, India, and most recently in Saranat, and also in the United States. So we're thrilled to be here. As Sophie mentioned, for over three decades, you've been talking about the importance of educating the heart and not just the mind. And you've been questioning how to address this notion of universally teaching secular ethics in the classroom. So what we're hoping to share with you today is what it looks like in the classroom. Yeah. So
Shall I start?
You start. As Kimberly mentioned, social emotional learning has five key components, or Dan mentioned it yesterday. So the five key components are self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, developing relationship skills, and responsible decision-making. We've added a sixth component, which we call interdependence. Yeah, it's okay, come. She will.
SEL, social emotional learning, five components. So I think we need to show it up.
We've put it into three domains, me, you, and us. In order,
me, you, and us.
I need to be grounded in myself first and have a self-to-self relationship before I can have a relationship with you and have perspective taking. And then once I can have a relationship with you, then we can create a relationship with us.
If you were to ask us, what does your approach involve and what is the heart of it, there's two important things. It's healthy relationship and a strong emotional literacy. So let me start with the me domain. The me domain is about developing self-awareness and self-regulation. This is being able to recognize your emotions, understand their impact on our behavior. It's also about regulating the emotions. And once I know I have this emotion, what do I do with it? It's also about developing a positive outlook to life and a realistic evaluation of ourselves. The way we teach this is, first, it's got three, we use three basic steps to teach self-awareness and regulation. The first one is the emotional thermometer. So this is simple emotional awareness. We explain to children and students that their emotions have doses, they have some doses of energy. Is it a high-level energy or is it a low-level energy? So high-level energy emotion would be like a volcano. I'm about to explode. So this could be anger, angry, being irritated, frustrated, but it could also be excitement, you know, being so happy because something fun is going to happen today, and I'm in the volcano. Now, on the other side, you have the iceberg, which is a low-level energy. I'm sad, tired, I'm feeling sick. Yes, and so we in the middle you have the tree zone, which is the calm and alert, where the brain is focused. I'm ready to learn, listen, also sort troubles and resolve conflict. When we teach this to children starting age 5, we also make a connection with the brain, and we use a model that is very simple, drawn from Dan Siegel. It's the hand-brain model. We explain that when you're in the volcano or the iceberg, most of the blood goes to the middle of your brain, which is the emotion center. We need to bring it back to the front in order to think. So children learn this as early as 5 years old, and they're very good at it. Once we've been aware of what's happening inside ourselves, we then move into emotional literacy, which is really naming properly the feeling with a real word instead of good, bad, or we don't really put a word to it. But in all languages around the world, we have hundreds of words to describe feelings, and we don't really use them. So here, again, this is a poster we start using in kindergarten. So children age 5 who cannot yet read will learn 15 feelings, and the question mark is for the feeling that is not on the poster because there are hundreds of them. And we don't stop there. We, after naming the feeling, we actually connect them to needs. Now, this is drawn from nonviolent communication developed by Marshall Rosenberg. And the amazing thing that happens is when we connect our feelings to our needs, which are for most part core human values, we regulate the emotion. So needs as core human values become powerful regulator, and they explain to us our emotions. If, say, I've had a fight with Tara and I'm angry and I need friendship, already I'm more regulated. And how can I meet my need for friendship? Maybe I should talk to her. So this is the emotional literacy that we use. And then finally, the last step is the regulation. Sometimes naming feelings and needs is not enough, so we need to engage in some exercises. Here you can see also children in Ladakh taking their temperature and using the posters of feelings and needs, which for us really shows the universality of this, of just developing emotional literacy. And below, older students having a mindfulness practice in the class. And it could be many things. It could be a yoga stretch in between classes. It could be just going out for a glass of water, coming back. So this is the me domain. It's quite critical. It's fundamental. This is the start that we'll build on, because once we know our emotions and our feelings and we can manage and regulate them, this gives us a very clear map of our internal emotions and how to manage them, how to understand and regulate them. We then bring this knowledge into the you domain. If I know I have feelings and needs, others must have them too. And if my feelings and needs are important, well, those of others are important too. So the you domain is about social awareness and relationship skills. Now here, this is where we develop empathy and compassion, perspective taking. Maybe we have different opinion, but we could talk about them without being disrespectful. This is where we also learn about diversity and differences. One of the ways we teach this is also by, you know, doing gratitude circles, appreciating things that go well between us based on this emotional literacy by being grateful. But for us, the key teaching in the you domain is really conflict resolution. So conflict resolution is essential. So we bring the emotional literacy that we've developed in the me domain by using our feelings and needs, but now sharing with others. I'm feeling sad and I need friendship. Maybe Tara's feeling angry and she needs to understand why I did this. And conflict resolution never happens at the level of emotions. It happens at our core human values. Friendship, understanding, kindness, love, this is where we sort out problems. Not between anger, sadness. This is where we judge and we fall into fear and interpretation of the other. So you can see also in Ladakh, two children using the poster to sort out a little problem they'd had in the schoolyard. So with this, where this new knowledge of using, well, actually the emotional literacy here also becomes a powerful language tool and communication tool to address situation and enhance and better our relationships. With this knowledge, we then bring it into the us domain. So the us domain, as Tara was mentioning, we've added a sixth component called appreciating interdependence. And this is fundamental. Appreciating interdependence. So only when we have a solid and a real understanding that we all depend upon each other, that for our own well-being and happiness, can we engage in the us domain. This leads us to better responsible decision making. So the us domain is also where we develop critical thinking, morality or moral development, and ethical responsible decision making. And the way we teach this is we like to engage the whole school in a weekly week full of activities. This one is called the Kindness and Compassion Week. So each child is asked to reflect on a little bit what Kim was saying before. You know, kind. What is kind? What can we do for others? What kind of actions can we do for each other? Reflect on them. But as we're doing this week, we also give the science behind compassion and why kindness is important for ourselves, but also for others. And responsible decision-making is also amazingly, it's really, really fun to teach this by cooperative learning. So engaging in large group cooperation, this is probably the highest level of communication that a student will need. Getting along with each other, trying to perform a task to achieve a result is not that simple. And so for small children, age 5, it would be something like, I give you a pair of scissors, Tara has the glue, I have crayons, and Jinpa has a sheet of paper. We each have to work together to achieve something. And then at a higher level, much more complex academic topics. So in the us domain, one thing that we're doing also is we're trying to develop systems intelligence, understanding our systems. So that could be social systems, as simple as a family, a classroom, a school, a country. And this might sound strange, but our systems have needs too. So, and this would, it would go like this. When we understand the needs of our systems, we're better able to address the problems. Last year we had trouble in one of our grade 5 class, and a teacher asked us to lead a group discussion, and the students started like this. We're not really happy. There's a lot of conflicts going on. We don't know what's going on. So we said, well, it looks like the level of happiness is going down. Yes. What do you think causes this? And then the children were thinking, we don't really help each other anymore. There's a lot of exclusion. Some friends stay together and we can't go and play with them. So children were already finding the need. We need more friendship, inclusion, maybe respect, and what can we do about this? So a boy said, I think, you know, something very simple, such as saying hello in the morning when we come in would be really nice. And then a girl said, why don't we try to work with people we know less so then everybody feels included? So this is really critical also to strengthen this notion of interdependence and responsible decision making. So now, this is quite interesting. The three domains each have an awareness component and as well as an action component. So the me domain, the awareness is of the self, and then what I do with that awareness. The you domain is the awareness of others. What do I do with this awareness? And now in the us domain, the awareness of interdependence. And what do I do with this awareness?
In the middle of... In the middle of our framework is our feelings and needs, which we call emotional literacy. And as Sophie mentioned, to teach emotional literacy, we teach it through self-awareness, connecting our feelings and needs and developing the literacy of feelings and needs, and then self-management. And we believe that, and when we teach it, we teach it using this this poster that we've developed. And we wanted to tell you a little story that sometimes as adults we make assumptions of how kids are feeling and needing.
Why is there a question mark on the sheet?
So because there are so many feelings and so many needs, we've only included a handful. But when the kids engage in conflict resolution, they often add a feeling. With the older students, we use cards like this, and there's 40 feelings and 40 needs, and they can use them without even needing to, without needing to speak them. So, for example, we had a little girl in grade 2 who was working really hard to do her homework.
So these would be the feelings and then the needs. So this is for older students because there are more emotions and they become more complex.
We've had some amazing success when students come in and they're crying and they can't even speak because they're crying so hard. You can use the feelings.
You need to bring it a little bit down. Yeah, okay.
You don't need to hear the story. They just need to put down the feelings and needs, and then they can start thinking of what a strategy would be. So a little girl in grade two, she was in an after-school program. She was trying to finish her homework very quickly because she wanted to go outside and play, and she erased so fast. And all of a sudden, she started getting very angry and speaking loudly, and she said a bad word. And the adult in the class thought that she said the bad word to her. And she took the girl and took her into the principal's office, and the girl was very much angry and carrying on, and the principal didn't really know what to do, but she was in a meeting with another teacher, so she said, just sit for a second and I'll be right there. But the girl was going on and on and on and on, and she started kicking the back of the chair of the teacher. The teacher then became dysregulated. That's not respectful. Sit down. Be quiet. We'll talk to you in a minute. And the principal said, whoa, whoa, whoa. So she said to the teacher, why don't you walk away for a few minutes and I'll speak to the little girl. But the little girl was still very agitated. So the principal said, can you just show me on the poster how you're feeling? And the little girl stopped and said, I'm feeling angry, which was not a surprise. But she also touched sad. And that calmed her. And then the principal said, can you show me what you need? And the little girl said, she pointed to the picture of the image of the need for kindness. And then she pointed to the need for support. And the principal said, well, I think I can offer you kindness. Would you like a hug? And the girl went into her arms and she started crying and crying and crying. And then the principal could say, how can I help? And the little girl said, well, I was trying to do my homework and I wanted to play outside, but I erased so quickly and I ripped my page and I didn't know how to fix it, so I scrumpled it up and I threw it in the recycling. And I did say a bad word, but I didn't say a bad word at the adult. I said it to myself because I'm mad at me. And the principal was like, oh, I can help you with that. And it's easy. The problem is simple. It's easy to resolve, but sometimes we're going so fast and we forget that kids can tell us what they need. We just need to slow down, and we need to give them the tools and the words to communicate. So we believe that by teaching this emotional literacy, we're helping within the me domain to develop this greater sense of personal kindness and self-affirmation and attention and concentration. We believe that within the you domain, by building this emotional literacy, we're building this compassion and empathy for others, this ability to take perspective. And most importantly, we're developing a language to engage in conflict resolution. So when we have problems, we have the words to discuss them, and we don't have to give our power back. It's not, you're so mean, you did this. It's, I'm sad, and I need to understand, or I need support, and I need friendship. And maybe I can't get my friendship from Sophie because we're too angry with each other. But I can meet my friendship by going and spending time with Sonia. I'm responsible for my feelings and needs. Once I know that within myself, I can connect with others in the you domain. Within the us domain, we believe that this emotional literacy helps to build compassion and empathy for the systems around us, our families, our classes, our schools. By doing cooperative learning and teamwork, we're building this sense of shared common humanity and that our actions have an impact on the world around us, whether it's just my friend Sophie or whether it's my class or the environment. We believe that we have three domains and we have three practices. So we teach emotional literacy in the me domain. We teach gratitude notes and disappointment notes so we can celebrate the good stuff and be able to identify and deal with the not-so-easy stuff. And then in the S domain, we build this notion of critical thinking and interconnection by having class circles and class discussions. So we believe... So we have a small film that we would like to show you. The small film just looks at how we teach students in the me domain. Did you want to add something?
Yes, I want to add something. So the film on the me domain, you will see children, they have learned already emotional literacy and this internal, what we call internal map. So that you will see them take their temperature, connect their feelings and needs, and then regulate.
I think what's important is that when we teach self-regulation, there's any number of ways to teach it. So we can teach it through mindfulness and deep breathing, but we also teach students how to use different martial arts, how to go for a walk, go for a run. This is important to mention because this is what makes it secular. It doesn't need to be based in any type of a perceived religion. It can be done in any way. So we'd like to show it to you.
Cet après-midi, c'est notre période zone de paix. OK? Alors, on va commencer par aller voir ce qui se passe à l'intérieur. On va prendre trois respirations, puis on va aller voir qu'est-ce qui se passe en dedans. Est-ce que ça bouge? Est-ce que c'est chaud? Est-ce que c'est froid? Est-ce que c'est tendu? Peut-être que pour toi, c'est plus facile si tu fermes les yeux. Mais tu n'es pas obligé de fermer les yeux. Est-ce que tu es prêt? OK, alors tu peux mettre tes mains sur ton bâton parce que l'air doit aller jusqu'au fond. On y va.
OK. OK.
Est-ce que tu as trouvé ce qui se passe? OK.
On ferme les yeux. Trois grandes respirations. Première respiration. Et on prend notre température, on se pose la question, comment je me sens aujourd'hui? Volcan, banquise.
Lève la main si tu es dans le volcan. OK. Qui est dans le banquise aujourd'hui? Qui est vraiment dans la zone calme à l'air? Ça va très bien aujourd'hui. Pour toi, Madeleine?
Qui veut partager leurs sentiments et leurs besoins aujourd'hui?
C'est dans deux. Nathan.
J'ai besoin de fumer et je suis excitée.
Est-ce que tu as pas peur? Quand on a peur de quelque chose de nouveau, tu as besoin de quoi? Je pense que oui.
Peut-être j'ai besoin de un peu d'espace, de laisser mon énergie sortir,
nerveux parce que j'ai oublié mes pochettes dans le
cool. 이제 랑종
Alors, on va montrer un petit changement d'énergie. Comment on peut retourner au calme avant de faire notre activité? Est-ce qu'on est prêt? Okay. Alors, pied par terre, dos droit, on inspire, on frotte les mains, on va prendre 5 grandes respirations. On inspire avec le nez, on expire avec la bouche. On y va.
On va faire ça entre nous. On inspire. On ferme les yeux.
Siddhartha, Ladakh.
Oh,
no.
So thank you very much, Your Holiness. We are very grateful for your vision, and we truly believe that this is 21st century literacy. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. I mean, those were very compelling demonstrations. The thing that strikes me about this is these are not demonstration projects. These are actually being embedded in school programs. As we heard from Kim, this is now part of the curriculum in British Columbia. And obviously there were demonstration projects that convinced the educators that these were of value in the school system. But all these programs that we've just heard about are now fully integrated into certain school domains. And hopefully they're going to be expanded into more schools with each passing year. The other thing that perhaps we can take as a topic of discussion is, it was touched on very lightly, it's the recognition that this is a fully integrated program in which all participants, the students and their parents, the teacher, the supervisors of the teacher, and then the policymakers, they all have to be part of this if it's going to be a success. And one of the themes of today, and we'll get to it this afternoon, I think, is this whole, there's a science of implementation of new good ideas. They don't happen by themselves. And we have to understand what these principles are, and we can be teaching ourselves. At the same time we're getting a better program to educate the heart, we can also be educating systems. And through that, we can then affect real change in society. So what I think we've seen, and I'll ask whether any of my colleagues here have any comments or questions in a moment, but what my last point is that I think what we've seen here today is that action truly speaks louder than words. And your message, which was a form of action, has led to these really impressive programs. We'll hear from Jen after the tea break about another very successful program that implements another element that's dear to your heart, and that is the ethical dimension of these, not only the social and emotional education, but also the ethics of this. We'll come to that. But in the meantime, let me just sit back and see whether any of the other presenters or moderators would like to add their thoughts.
Yeah.
So I'm being reminded that perhaps I should extend that honor that to you. I shouldn't have to be reminded.
I really. admire you already implementing these things, and you already notice result, obviously some awareness about our inner value of these things. So the key thing is I, you, us. Eventually, I think 7 billion human beings should develop a sense of us, we. So now, I think these I consider something like pilot.
Right. Project pilot.
Pilot. Mm-hmm. So I wish, you see, some UNESCO or some international body, you see, should take involved in these things. Then gradually, you see, look now, Western nation, I think generally speaking, more sort of kasota.
Open.
I think in the past, a lot of problem, a lot of suffering. So generally, seems, you see, Europeans, you more mature. Now Middle East, Africa, Latin America. I think they seems not yet reach that level. So problem, a lot of problem, as I mentioned yesterday. So now time come. We have to think now how to reach in this troubled area. We individual cannot do much. So some NGO and which connected with UN, maybe. Now I think time come.
We have to. Body.
Because of that, we already have, I think, very sound sort of experiences now there. Now time come, share with more people, and particularly those areas, those countries where a lot of problem. That's just I felt. And
the essence is really what has been captured by Shantideva in a beautiful line. He says that if you do not care for others' well-being, then let alone thinking about attaining Buddhahood, because he's talking in the context of Buddhism, or a Buddhist path, saying, forget about Buddhahood. Even in this very life, there will be no joy. This seems to be really the key.
The whole our life, individual life, if you surrounded by friend with affection, with love, you feel much happier. Even day-to-day life, you surrounded by people who are really showing love. Even weeks, days, and hours, warm-heartedness is the key factor. So use human intelligence. analyze, develop conviction. Not God say or Buddha say, no, not that way. Analyze. Then you develop conviction. That affects our emotion. That affects our life. So, now I think now, second level now, we have to think how to share
extended
those troubled area.
His Holiness is also talking about scaling it up, basically, so that it doesn't remain just confined to a small area.
May I ask a question?
Let Kim can speak to this point.
Yeah, I was just going to... hello. Over there. Oh, great. So, Your Holiness, thank you so much for those comments. And you're right, we need to take it beyond just North America and around the world. And there's a couple of organizations now that are beginning to do that, that have world reach. One is the Organization for Economic and Cooperative Development, or the OECD, that often has focused on academic achievement with PISA tests and ranking countries. They now have an initiative called Education 2030.
And they are
Education 2030.
And trying to think of what are the skills, attitudes, values, and knowledge that students who graduate in 2030 would need. And beyond moving with academic achievement, they include compassion, empathy, they include self-regulation, trust, and hope. So here is an organization that has now 29 countries, including China and Russia, that can be a part of that movement. And I know Richie is working with UNESCO, and maybe you want to talk to that.
I just wanted to introduce Your Holiness. We have colleagues here from UNESCO who are based in Delhi. Nandini, you can stand, developmental psychologist here in Delhi, and her colleague, who are at the forefront of bringing these programs to many parts of the world, including conflict zones and areas of natural disaster, programs that incorporate these elements and are disseminating them quite widely, and also are committed to doing research to evaluate their impact. Nandini, do you want to just mention which countries you are...
So, Your Holiness, we are very grateful and humbled to be here, and thankful to the Mind and Life Society for allowing us to come in. So we have countries from Africa. We have Cameroon that is part of it. We have South Africa. We have Japan. We have Sri Lanka. We have Bangladesh. And we are now trying to generate interest in the Middle East, too. And starting January next year, we will be rolling out a program across 15 countries, starting out with a pilot from 5 schools from each country, hoping to reach about 10,000 children in our first year, and tying up very heavily with Richie to implement the curriculum. And we are using technology to try and scale so that the curriculum can actually reach out to children who might even be in remote areas. And our focus is going to be more on adolescents at this point in time, because we recognize a lot of the challenges coming in from the adolescents first. So the countries have actually reached back to say that the age group of 13 to 15 years, and we've been talking to colleagues here and I think taking a lot of the beautiful work that they are doing to these countries. Thank
Wonderful.
You so much.
Thank you. Thank you. I just felt now, Israel. There's some conflict, Palestine and Israelis. That also source of problem. That affect whole Arab Muslim countries. Meantime, many Jews better educated. So now, one time my visit Israel, I have been on a few occasions. One occasion, I think firstly, I invited by one Jewish group. So, first a few days, I hear from the Israeli viewpoint. Then, after a few days, I met some Palestinians. So then I heard their view. Oh, huge gap. Then I think second time or third time, I met one small group some Jews, some Palestinians. Some kind of their thinking is reconciliation. And I told them, no matter how small you are, but this is the seed of eventually, you see, try to, I mean, bring to peace between Palestine and Israelis. So there are some people, I think the Jewish, I think better education, so maybe sort of easily understandable these things. So I think should start these kind of education and then bring Palestinians. Yep. This problem is not just problem with two countries, but affect large number of people. So very important. And I feel that there's Kasota, greater chance, you see, to develop the genuine spirit of reconciliation. In any way, they have to live side by side. No matter how Israeli powerful militarily, you cannot wipe out the Palestinians. Then the Palestine, with help of whole Muslim Arab countries, difficult to eliminate Jews. So they have to live together. There's no other choice. Then much better. Live, or say they, because of the harmoniously. And I think, but when I visited the Jerusalem area, the Palestine area, dry. The Jewish resettlement or something.
Area, no.
Area, more green. And I noticed, you see, they use one pipe, water pipe, and they, each tree, one drop of water. Not wasting water. There are some scarcity of water, but they efficiently utilize water resources. So the result, the Jewish area, more green. So now much better use the Israeli sort of the technology
and expertise,
and let them build. Basically, same human being. The different faith is minor point, I feel. So that just I felt. Maybe you can start some work there. Eventually, you see, the Israelis and Palestine, you see, they solve their problem from heart. And I think it affects the whole
area.
Middle East, I think.
Your Holiness, we're involved in a we've started discussions with a school in Israel. That's a school that started with 25 families.
You need to speak up.
Half Jewish, half Israeli, and half Palestinian in one school, and they started with 25 families, and now they're 250 families, and they're starting to bring in this curriculum into their school.
Wonderful, wonderful.
So I think it's starting. Your vision is starting. 15
minutes. Out. Many years ago,
unfold
in Switzerland. The, what called Pestalozzi.
Pestalozzi village. Yeah.
Pestalozzi village. There I noticed some Jewish children, some Palestinian children play together. So on the young age, not much differences. Yeah. So long, showing smile, and maybe exchange some sweet. they live very happily together.
It is our experience that we've seen over more than 10 years, children do not like conflict. They don't like it. They don't.
True.
And when we give them the tools, they will fix the conflict. And this, in this sense, they are our teachers. And this is why it's important to start when they're very young and have good habits. It's not just about conflict. It's about being able to have arguments and try to understand each other and keep respect while we're discussing. And even though this is uncomfortable, these are all teaching opportunities, and we use them as such.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Yes, we'll just take one comment, very brief, and then we'll have tea. We'll reconvene and hear Jen's talk. But please, Aaron.
You're on.
Your Holiness, I want to bring a slightly different view, or it's a question perhaps. This was so beautiful to see, and the potential, and it touches so deeply into the core of the longing as a human being for that kind of harmony and beauty. And nevertheless, as you were pointing out, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict runs so deep. It's rooted so deeply, it's almost impossible to understand. And in the, so I would say it's systemic. I think the word system. So I want to turn our attention for a moment to the southern part, or at least the middle part of North America, the United States, where the educational system is so, the intention is so deeply connected to economic development and materialism specifically, acquisitiveness, greed, desire, to put it into those terms. And so as children wake up to different possibilities and compassionate action and interdependency, inevitably, this leads to the need for a change in the intent itself of the school system.
That's true.
And I'm wondering if you have anything to say about that.
Yesterday, I already mentioned, I often use it expressing the existing modern education is very much oriented about material value. So it's lacking taking care about the inner world, only external world. So because of that education, the whole generation, more materialistic sort of thinking, materialistic life, materialistic culture. And the materialistic culture is very much based, is very much related with sensorial experience. Not much thinking about mental sort of thinking. Without paying more attention about the mental level, difficult to sort of promote compassion or these things. That's mental level. The sensorial, or say the consciousness, is something like servant of the mental
mind.
Mental mind. So key thing is mental mind. And then positive emotion, destructive emotion, both related with main mind. So now it is important to know more detail about the system of our mind. So it's not sufficient just to say brain, brain, brain.
Okay. Well, on that note, we'll return to it. That's a theme for the week. Please enjoy 15 minutes for tea, and then return at 11. 10 minutes to 11.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
This is our curriculum.
Well. The second part of the morning's presentations. So I'd encourage you to come immediately and take your seats. Thank you.
His Holiness's office requested us to create a secular ethics curriculum.
Right.
And so this is the result of that, and it's extremely So it's yes. not actually, we don't actually call it a program yet. We're just calling it a framework.
Okay.
And we haven't quite decided the trajectory if it will be a solid program. Yeah.
This is more
calling it sample curriculum.
Right, an early stage.
Yes, yes. We'd like to emphasize that. Yeah. It's yes. really
thank you.
10 years looks very different from my
right.
This is more of it. I'm going actually to the micro level of the child.
Right. Okay.
So it's actually what they're creating with their hands when they're engaging this work and what are they thinking about.
Davis.
Okay. I'll try to weave those in.
I just, we didn't have a chance.
I'm on my way. Okay. So we're still awaiting people outside on the foyer to return to the room or take their seats outside. We're going to be beginning in just a minute or so. So we need to send some. Please take your seats. Please take your seats. One more. Safe. Come on through. Hi. Okay.
Thank you. Okay. So I can tell by the tone in the room that you're all energized. You've had a nice cup of tea, and you're ready for the last half of the morning's presentations. So if I could just ask people now to pay attention and pick up these dialogues after we're finished, then we're going to begin right now. So your attention is very much appreciated. Okay. Yes, thank you. Okay, well, thank you all for coming back. I know you couldn't wait. I couldn't. So, Your Holiness, we're going to now hear the third presentation of the morning. It builds on the same theme of putting into practice the ideas that have been developed through theory and social-emotional learning. And whereas the first two presentations were more well-developed and integrated into systems, there's a very real need, obviously, all the time for developing new programs. And so your office extended an invitation to individuals around the world to think about building curricula that have an ethical dimension to them. Mm-hmm. And this is where Jennifer Knox and her colleagues in the group at Emory have been doing some really fundamental work. And their program is called the SEEC program, Social, Emotional, and Ethical Learning. So I'm going to turn it over to Jen, and we'll hear her presentation.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
Your Holiness, it is my honor to be here and certainly to be a representative of an amazing group of individuals at Emory who are very devoted to your work at the core level.
Emory.
And so I'm here, but not just me, along with Dr. Tenzin Nobseng Negi and then Dr. Brendan Osawa da Silva. So among this community, they're here present, but we have many behind the scenes. And I would like to give you a gift on our behalf. This is the completed version 3 framework, the social, emotional, and ethical learning framework, which we have completed at this point, and two sample curricula. So the first one is for ages 5 to 7 years old, early elementary level. And this is 3 of 7 chapters. There will be more to come, and I'll talk about that context later. And this is ages 11 to 14, so middle school level. And this is the bound copy. So, and I believe most of you here have copies as well. So this presentation is actually coming from a very pioneering moment in our development. So we're very thrilled to also have the individuals here in this room as collaborators as we start to scale our program and to go deeper and certainly within the research realm, as it's at the very, very, very beginning. In fact, I'm going to be sharing with you work that I've been doing just in one classroom at one school so that you can see at a granular level what it looks like with high school students. This is ages for my school, 14 to 18 years of age. So it's very, very different from Sophie and Tara's work where the children are quite young and learning these skills very early. Now I'm working with a more developed mind, so I'll be sharing with you an overview of the framework and its new incarnation, and then also And then also bringing those children into the room. I think one of the things about this gathering that's so phenomenal is we're able to have meetings of the minds and hearts in this space. But there are children who we all bring along with us. And I'm representing them at a heart level. And they also are coming in connection to you and your work. So as I said, I'm coming as a teacher. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a researcher. I'm actually an artist also, a visual artist, and a mother. So I'm coming with a story that's quite personal in an intimate space of the classroom where I work daily with these students. Our framework, as you know, was developed by Your Holiness, in alignment with Your Holiness's writing quite directly from the outset, Beyond Religion and Ethics for the New Millennium. So it started out as a progression of 10 competencies, and now in collaboration with brilliant advisors such as Geshe Jempala, and we have them here, Rob and Kim, who are in this room working alongside us, as well as Linda Lantieri with Castle. These individuals have helped to map our framework in a way to create this new domain and dimension concept. So I'm going to take all of us through this. As you'll notice on the right-hand side, we'll also bring Dan Goleman into the conversation. So Dan Goleman and Peter Senge wrote a book called The Triple Focus, which basically mapped the three focuses of inner focus and emotional intelligence, other focus, social intelligence, and outer focus, systems intelligence. So this has become the structure through which our work has begun from the outset. The other components that I'll bring...
social intelligence of the meta-pension.
So the components that I want to bring the attention to here are the components that enrich existing SEL programs. So the unique aspect of what we're doing is that these elements were integral to the framework from the outset, from the birth of our work. They're not supplementary to an existing program, but rather from its inception, and without any, our framework would not exist. So those would be attention training, which is in our self-regulation box there and component. And then our work has been founded on the principle of compassion and care. So you'll note that those are quite dominant. And it's the lens through which all of our competencies are explored. Interdependence and systems thinking and ethical engagement. So the idea here is that when these students are building these skills through the three levels of understanding, that the ethical dimension is actually a spontaneous outcome of the work that they're doing in their inner landscape of cultivating these skills in a direct way. The three levels of understanding is quite new, and you brought this into the room yesterday so beautifully, and I'll talk about how we interpret the three levels within our pedagogy and what that looks like on the ground. And we also started to recognize with our advisors that there is actually a component that was necessary to develop, which is their pre-meditation skills, recognizing that many individuals who are in our culture have experienced trauma. And so without developing some fundamental skills of regulating the nervous system, the students are not often able to even move into a meditation. And the breath can often be a trigger for that former trauma. So we've built in an entire chapter based on building skills of resilience. And that's within all levels and a very integral part of the culture that we're creating in the class. So if I could show you the dimensions here, move from awareness to compassion to engagement, and the domains move from personal, social, and systems. So there are many ways that one can engage this framework from the left to the right or from the top to the bottom. So I'll be speaking to the dimensions first and the the qualities within those dimensions. So the awareness dimension refers to cultivating a nuanced first-person understanding of our emotions and feelings. And this is through existing models, also from science, as well as the work that many of these individuals are doing. But it's also through personal experience, common sense as well. And then it pertains to the ability to perceive inner and outer phenomena in a more and more sophisticated way. And it includes one's own inner life in the personal domain, but then we move into the social domain where we recognize the presence and the needs of others in addition to the presence and the needs of ourselves. And then interdependence in the systems domain, recognizing that we as individuals are an intricate part of a system, as well as an interdependent part of a system, as well as understanding interdependence and its effect on us. The compassion dimension in the center there is where we're cultivating this way of relating to oneself, others, and humanity as a whole through kindness, empathy, and concern for their happiness and suffering. So critical thinking is crucial to this dimension so that one is able to discern through understanding of self, what will lead to one's own long-term well-being. When it's extended to the social domain, one is able to discern the needs of others. And then finally, recognizing fundamental quality, or recognizing common humanity at the systems level. In the engagement dimension, this is where our skills sit, where we are starting to cultivate skills of engaging the world. And these are attention training skills, as well as effective communication skills when we're relating to other individuals, conflict transformation, and then finally ethical engagement within the systems domain. So here are our three levels of understanding. So we recognize that in order for anyone to thrive, one must be supported within a culture of compassion. So this takes a stance of compassion, as well as on the part of the teacher, a responsibility of self-cultivation. So part of the work that we're doing is understanding how to cultivate teachers who are asking the questions of themselves that we wish the children to ask. And without the teachers developing those skills to a point of intended embodiment, then we feel it's not possible for the students to engage in that work alongside them. So teacher cultivation is an essential component, as well as a caring environment. So a stance of compassion as it relates to the intimate classroom environment where children are co-creating agreements of how they want to be together. And if another individual might infringe on one's feelings, they establish a way of identifying how they can work through that from the outset. The group agreements are something that are a living document. So students revisit and add and remind one another. And that becomes the guiding culture co-created also along with the teacher. So of course it's always helpful to have a school with a stance of compassion, but this doesn't always happen. But I'm even seeing within my small classroom that with that stance of compassion from the outset, the culture within the classroom is actually slightly different from when they leave that room. And they are bringing that into the school. So it works, it's seeming to work both ways. So the received knowledge level, this is, of course, as Your Holiness is very aware, the basic knowledge that one acquires through content. So this is, you know, books, multimedia, scientific research. This is a component that's a critical step in the acquisition of knowledge, but it's not sufficient. So the outcome of the level one received knowledge is that students have a detailed understanding of concepts or definitions, and they may be able to regurgitate those, but it's not, there's no personal connection to that content. It's merely conceptual. So they have not developed conviction about the knowledge. Level two is the critical insight, or as we might say in the classroom, the making space for the aha moment to arise, the personal insight to arise. These arise through students' personal investigative process and sustained analysis and critical reflection. So that, of course, looks very different at the different developmental levels. But the idea is that students are examining a variety of perspectives through a variety of means so that they may understand multiple points of view on one topic. And the outcome here is that conceptual knowledge starts to become deeper. They start to make connections to their personal life. They exhibit a more sophisticated understanding of concepts, and they're able to clearly articulate the pros and cons of the topic, thereby developing more of a personal stance and being able to, with conviction, start to defend that stance. So this is quite sophisticated for the Western world and education generally, even this level of critical insight. But when we start to move into embodied level of understanding, the way in which we approach this is through deep internalization of knowledge through praxis, repetition, required repeated and sustained familiarization with concepts and application to one's life. Here, instead of just using contemplative practices, we also use methods of journal writing, sitting and thinking about a concept, writing on one's own, dialogue between peers, dialogue in small groups, and then with the larger group. And then we also have the formal practice as well. But that, we have found, we have to build the skills first before they're able to stabilize attention. And in fact, it takes quite a long time to get to that point. So this is the way that we start to build that deeper level of understanding from the beginning. And the outcome of this level is that students employ this knowledge spontaneously because it's a part of their abiding lens. It's natural, yes.
Solanis is asking a question about the word compassion. When we use that word in English, compassion, does it carry the idea that you can be compassionate towards yourself as well? Because sometimes there is a notion when people talk about compassion, it involves not caring for oneself. In fact, the opposite, some kind of self-sacrifice, like, you know, giving up oneself.
So the way in which I
think since many years, through my broken English, I usually use this saying, selfish, without selfish, or care, self, we survived. So this morning I mentioned each night. Nine hours sleep.
Self-care.
Part of caring myself.
Self-care.
So no. The selfish, the foolish selfish, and wise selfish. Taking care, we are a social animal. And broadly speaking, we are part of the world. So therefore, for your own survival, for your own
well-being,
happiness, joyfulness,
is very much related with other. Therefore, respect other and showing love to others. So that's wise selfish. Ultimately, you get much more benefit. Then just think me, my century, my world. And a lot of worry, a lot of anxiety, and sort of suspicion, distrust, isn't it? Why selfish? Really,
So if the person individually can make a change within the way himself or herself and the way in which he or she sees the world, you can in fact perceive everything around you as a kind of a source of joy.
So now, sometimes I feel a little critical view about these wrathful deities. To whom they show wrathful face? No. Entire sentient being. Kasota, our best friend, and we usually call mother sentient being. We must develop a feeling of dearness to entire sentient being, as dear as your own this life's mother. So we use the word the mother sentient being. Meantime, even some scriptures mentioned, oh, that's the enemy of Buddha Dharma. And the wrathful deities. I don't think this is, I think some of these teaching, I think to people who follow Buddha Dharma, but their mental level very, very low. So then, according them,
So sometimes you do see, for example, in the Buddhist Tibetan iconography, you know, very wrathful deities looking quite fierce, ready to pounce
on
something.
One sort of story. One occasion, one Japanese, you see, came to see me, I think 10 years ago. You see, he told me he visited Tibet and some sort of
temples.
A temple, or within the temple,
yes.
A little bit dark room, and very wrathful sort of deities there. That night, he lost his sleep.
Because of he had a nightmare.
Then he asked me, Buddha Dharma, Buddhism, main message is love, compassion. Why is this wrathful deity come? He asked me that. So like that. So I think if you sincerely practice bodhicitta, altruism, infinite altruism, combined with wisdom, then you see that altruism is such a sort of powerful. From that viewpoint, everything is very positive.
So to
Kangen Chan and the Kasada.
So to complete the translation, so His Holiness was saying that, you know, of course you do have this iconography, and so these things must be taken into context, and sometimes they are skillful means. For example, like in the Buddha's own scriptures, there are statements. Buddha himself never espoused the notion of, you know, eternal self or as Atman. But at the same time, there are statements in the scriptures where, for the benefit of specific types of practitioners, in order to give them sense of security, sometimes even in the Buddha's own statements, there are, you know, statements that suggest that there might be something beyond the body and mind, something called the self, the owner of that. So those are skillful statements that are made for, you know, specific purposes. Because otherwise, for someone who really seriously takes the idea of universal compassion seriously, then any sentient beings that is deserving of compassion can never be an object deserving of our wrath or anger or hatred. So for such a person, as Shantideva says, Shantideva at one point says that having contemplated in this manner and having espoused this kind of ideal, now I invite all beings as my guest and for this wonderful feast. So all gods and demons and ghosts, whoever you are, be relaxed. So that really is the idea that, you know, for someone who takes compassion seriously, there cannot be such a thing as enemy. Because anyone who's deserving of compassion is an object worthy of compassion. And that should be seen as a true friend. So this is the perspective. So in Tibetan rituals, sometimes there are rituals that expel the obstructive forces, and even that, you know, the kind of in the liturgy of this text, it talks about procedures where you summon these obstructive forces, and then you scold them and you expel them, you know, beyond the boundaries of the great oceans.
I think old thinking, narrow-minded, like that. Really? Okay. No, too much.
No. Please. A group agreement for us, all has a voice in this room. Oh. A group agreement for this room, all of us have a voice in this room. No need to. It's just timing, maybe. to ensure that we cultivate these three levels of understanding within one day, we have created the curriculum material in order to create a kind of a structure that is not necessarily happening in this order, but the idea is that we have an opening and check-in. When the children come into the room, that we are connecting with them, and that we're doing a practice where either they're regulating their nervous systems, or they're engaged in a reflective component, or it's just a dialogue of check-in to make sure that each individual is welcomed into that space. Then we have the presentation or direct instruction. This is that received knowledge. And that's, you know, that's done in experiential ways as well, but it's when we introduce material. And then we have these insight activities, which are designed to prompt investigation. So to take advantage of what you mentioned yesterday, Your Holiness, when you said we have an opportunity in education to create a space for critical and analytical thinking. So this would be the area where students are given the opportunity to engage in a personal investigation of that content from multiple points of view. And hopefully those insights will emerge, but they might emerge for each person differently. Then we have the reflective practice, where we deepen that level, that understanding into the embodied level. So journal writing. Oftentimes kids maybe don't want to speak to one another. Their practice might be to contemplate internally. Some might actually need to deepen through relationship. So we alternate and have structures around dialogue and writing. And even making of art as well. And then we have a discussion debrief and further directions that we then use to scaffold the learning for the next class. So I'm bringing this group into the room. These are students who go to Woodward Academy. It's a school in College Park, Georgia, just by the airport in Atlanta. And they are part of a community of 2,700 students. This is the largest school in the continental United States. And we have, I'm actually an alum of the school and a teacher there.
Oh,
then your view is more biased.
Exactly. Yes, I acknowledge. And so the student body is actually 49% students of color. So it's quite unique. We bring many students from an hour in all directions. But I'm showing the image because they are here with me, not in physical form, but here to meet you and express their gratitude for your vision. It's provided them with a richness, which I'm going to allow them to share. I have a film, and I'd like to set it up by just saying that Brendan and I actually went into the classroom one day. We had groups of them coming in, and they were very nervous. In high school, often, this self-consciousness. You know? And so we did a practice, similar nurturing moment, you know, a benefactor, but a secular version of stabilizing the nervous system. They asked for this, and afterwards they came in and they talked to us. And the questions that I asked them were, what are you coming to know about emotions and the mind? What does self-compassion mean to you? And is there a significant experience in your life where you've applied the understandings from this course? So these are the responses. It might be a bit difficult to hear, so let's see.
Turn on and off. That's one thing that I've learned.
Where's the
thing? It's they're always going to be present. Emotions, you know, you're going to get angry, sad, happy, depressed, whatever.
Emotions aren't like something that we need to be afraid of. They're natural. We're going to have them, even, and they're not really any bad emotions or good emotions. Like anger might be perceived as like a bad emotion, but we all have it, and it's a necessary emotion that we need to have. But we just need to understand and learn how to portray or feel each emotion in moderation.
Sometimes I don't control my emotions. Sometimes they just kind of come out. So in relationship to my mind, I'm starting to become like more aware of what my emotions are and taking time to try and process them and see how I can resolve whatever situation I'm in that's making me either happy, sad, angry, upset, anything.
I'm coming to learn that emotions aren't something that just come out of nowhere and like take control of you. We create them ourselves, and so we have the power to not manipulate them, but kind of guide them.
So it's not about like saying, okay, I'm never ever going to be angry, I'm going to constantly be happy. That's just unrealistic, I think. So it's about trying to make these emotions work for you and trying to keep you in a homeostasis state, if you will.
Just the next.
What I've learned with self-compassion is it doesn't have to be like this big, like throwing a celebration for yourself, but it's just like knowing your self-worth.
I always put myself to this high standard, but I realize that it's like, it's okay for me to make mistakes.
As like teenagers.
How do I?
Yeah.
I might need Rob's help, actually. Can I pause these and then? Oh, I can just go. Oh, that's my last one. No.
Yeah, if you press forward, yeah.
Forward, okay. Well, it's
yeah.
Uh-oh, it's coming. But this is the. Can I?
Motion.
No, you have to go to.
I have to go back. I have to have Rob. Sorry.
Rob, can you?
Go wrong side. Emotions are not something that you can just turn on.
Okay. I see now.
Didn't do something.
Look better now.
Beat ourselves up a lot.
Before
we're
that.
Like,
there
Okay, what I've learned with self-compassion is it doesn't have to be like this big, like throwing a celebration for yourself, but it's just like knowing your self-worth.
I always put myself to this high standard, but I realize that it's like, it's okay for me to make mistakes.
As like teenagers, we beat ourselves up a lot over like small things. Sometimes they're big, but like mostly small things. And how we should just like have compassion towards ourselves as well as others.
If you know what you're capable of, I feel like that's self-compassion. Not forcing yourself to put yourself in situations you're not comfortable in, not pushing yourself too hard. Like in school, sometimes I push myself way too hard. I put too much in my schedule I know I can't do. It's not that. It's just knowing what you're capable of and being okay with what you can do.
It feels better, like, talking to people, yeah, too, talking, like, with the class, like, when we have group discussions.
I think the whole class in general has been profound. It's not like an spontaneous moment that got to me. It was like, it's like, it has, like, last semester was a very smooth process, which is what I really liked about it. It was no epiphany, it just slowly came to me.
I think the activity that we did where we thought of a moment where, like, we kind of acted out in a way, and then we were given examples of what could have happened, like what we could have done in that moment. And so now, like, when things happen to me where I get, like, frustrated or angry, I always go back to that. Thinking about, well, what could I do instead of what, like, I'm thinking to do? What could I do to maybe improve the situation?
I feel like this class has made me, like, a more happy and open person. Like, I'm more sociable now that I understand how things work with emotions and everything. So I think it has really improved my life in general.
Peace.
No, no.
Wonderful.
So as you could see, most of the comments were made from the personal domain after they've experienced many different activities where they are investigating different emotion models and their own thoughts, relating it to their own lives, and recognizing that they have a choice to discern whether to make a choice that might lead to the same conclusions that have always led to, or embrace an opportunity to step into decision making with intention. So I'm going to show you, Your Holiness, some student work. And this is work that they have created in the classroom. This is as granular as it gets. We use visual art language in some way, in many ways, to document. So we've... So I'll show you some examples here. So at the very beginning of the process of coming to understand where physical sensations are in the body, which is one of our enduring understandings that we're striving for, these students went into an orchestra classroom where their peers played music for them, and they reflected on the experience and recognized where in the body and then the intensity, and they charted these.
Where is body?
And then these are charts of the autonomic nervous system. So they reflected on their bodies and whether or not they were activated into... So they charted a 24-hour cycle of their autonomic nervous system where they were bumped into hyperarousal, out of their resilience zone, is the language that we use, or into their hypoactive states. And one insight that the children had when they put them up in the room, there was one student who said, you know, I thought I was the only one who was dysregulated, but just like me, each person in this room has been triggered and is bumped out of their resilient zone.
그래서
I wanted to show you just one way in which we are attempting to bring sophistication to your request, Your Holiness, of understanding the map of the mind. So this activity is one in which we use a mind jar. This is used very differently in this context. Some people might be familiar with this concept. But here we use the clear jar as a metaphor. And students are engaged in a reflective practice where they document emotions or thoughts that emerged in the practice in written form. And then they choose objects with a variety of dimensions and weights and textures to represent what those specific emotions do to to cloud the mind. And then when we're agitated and it's stirred, then what happens and how it settles. But this is a vehicle to do many explorations, and the kids had these insights, and I'll read them. They're quite hard to see. We tend to build up emotions. We feel one way, and then another emotion can build on top of that. Emotions can cloud our minds and mess up our judgment. Just a few weeks ago, I did not think of emotions changing quickly. It is not until you slow down and check in with yourself that you see how quickly your emotions change. And this is one last example. So we then take that exploration and use this atlas of emotions, which Your Holiness helped bring Paul into Ekman. The world.
Paul Ekman.
Paul Ekman.
Oh, Egypt.
Uh-huh. And so they begin to chart the context of emotion. So start to understand the complexity, that it's not just one emotion, but that there are emotional triggers. And this child says, at any given moment, we are all feeling so many different emotions at the same time. Each action impacts each emotion, triggering the brain to think and feel a certain way based on who we are as a person and the situation at hand. Self-compassion is not necessarily self-esteem. It is not entirely the act of uplifting yourself, but more so understanding oneself and emotions. Okay. And then finally, just to wrap up, this is the trajectory of our scope and sequence. So you have chapters 3 of 7 here, and currently we're working with teachers to help test these materials. And so it takes some time to feel confident that this material is working. So in July, we hope to have the following 4 chapters completed, and we'll then be training with partner organizations. And I'll show you where those partner organizations are located. Atlanta, Peoria, Aspen, Frankfurt, Germany, and then here in India with VANA and the Department of Education. Children in Crossfire, Richard Moore in Ireland. We have not done a training, but plan to with him. In Italy, Brazil, Chile, and Vancouver.
Usually I describe my hero.
Yes.
Young age.
Yes.
I think 10 during conflict, Northern Ireland. And one British as a soldier was a shot. And hit, yeah. Simultaneously, both eye lost. When he was of the conscious, right?
When he became conscious, yeah.
No anger. Only now I cannot see, I no longer see my mother's face. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Just ordinary human being. No negative feeling. Eventually, the British soldier who shot they know each other. They eventually because of the
became known to each other. Yeah, became known to each other.
Become very good friend. So a few occasions he invited me. I went there. I truly feel my hero. The practitioner, these things, understandable. They deliberately practice these things. But just ordinary one child, you see, without anger. And then, you see, eventually he carried study. Then eventually he found a beautiful wife and a true daughter. I teasing him, you cannot see beautiful face, I can enjoy. Very nice. So I really feel hero, my hero. His background, just a normal.
Ordinary background.
Oh, no special training or knowledge. So we have the potential. And use that potential, then further sort of through education, further strengthening this value. Then I think a happy world can achieve. Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I was about to invite you. Sorry. I was about to invite you to respond to this, but you did it so beautifully. I think you've, unless you'd like to add some more comments about the whole morning, I may turn to our colleagues.
Tony, maybe I can interrupt here.
Please.
Your Holiness, you have listened to this morning's presentation where three different programs were introduced, Mind Up, C3, and then Emory program. So all of these are inspired by your vision and your call for educating the heart. So I think one of the things that we are all hoping is that now that you have listened to this, you have seen this, how these are conducted in a classroom setting, you know, one thing that would be really helpful is if you can share some insights on saying what this is missing, why haven't you done this? What about this part doesn't seem to be strong enough? You know, don't you bring that element? Why are you doing this in a particular sequence? If any insights you can share, you know, a lot of these are still in the process. Emory one is at the very early stage. Other two programs are a bit more established, but still they are evolving. And all of these programs are really struggling to find compassion and ethics as an integrated part of the approach. And in a sense, you know, if I may be, you know, a bit presumptuous, what we're looking for is kind of SEL 2.0. What is the next step? You know, SEL is spread a lot, but what can we do to really kind of enrich it further so that it, in addition to teaching all the skills, we can also teach the values and the qualities and the ethics and compassion in a truly secular, universal way as you, you know, envision and aspire for. So if you can share any insights and saying that maybe this piece is not there, I haven't seen this part.
No, nothing. I think we are thinking the well-being of 7 billion human beings. We are part of that. So our discussion also on that level, not individual experience. Then there is differences. Oh, I say I'm a sort of Buddhist practitioner. Over now 82 years practice. So that's the capacity to certain people. And then some Jain practitioner. Oh, wonderful experience. But these not common for 7 billion human beings. So I participate. Now, I think in the last, I think several years at our meeting, I never sort of discussed about rebirth or salvation. These are more or less, Kasota, individual business. and difference of the Kazakh tradition. So, as a common level, I think you have also more experience than me. So nothing to say. I really appreciate. There are a few, my sort of view I already mentioned. So now we should think Kasota. Little to the higher level.
Scaling it up.
Oh.
Scaling it up.
Scaling. Oh.
Scaling it up. Scaling.
Yes. So, that's all?
I think so. One more. Michelle, you had a point?
Yeah, I was thinking, giving...
Hold it up.
Okay.
Okay.
No, wait.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it on?
There.
So much for my skill level. Given the presentation that were given yesterday and the importance of early childhood, how about scaling it down in terms of getting to younger kids? Is that feasible? Or should it be adapted? Programs, certainly the programs that we've seen today, could be adapted. Is this a possibility?
Go ahead.
My mic is not on.
You have to speak louder.
So, there.
But we know, and there are better experts than me here on social emotional learning, but for early childhood, the adult is the best model. So any form of program has to aim at training the adult much more than the children. And this is where we need to look at how we train and how we give this kind of knowledge to families. And we saw from the research that during pregnancy is kind of fundamental. So social emotional learning has to be brought at this level to the adult. And you know, we didn't talk about the challenges of teaching social emotional learning, but one of the challenges is that children learn this very quickly. This is not the problem. The problem is the adults looking after them. We've lost our emotional literacy. We're not doing really well with our feelings, and we don't really understand. We overlook the impact we have on children. So the training has to be done with the adults at this stage.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just to add to what Sophie said, we've spent the last 10 years in the classroom, and we've noticed that we're spending more and more time now with the teachers mm-hmm. of all ages, preschool and high school and in-service teachers, and more time with parents. It's the parents who also need the support of these skills, so that seems to be where our emphasis is going right now.
And we're also thinking about bringing social-emotional learning to the workplace at this stage.
That's how because, the way in which we're reaching parents is not through school. Because when we offer after-school support and workshops, parents don't come, not because they don't choose to, but they're doing homework and dinner and they're busy and they're working. So we've decided to start a project in Montreal that's starting in April, going into the workplace where we're offering lunch and learns, where parents of high school of elementary school kids can come and learn about social emotional learning and how they can become better able at self-regulating and managing themselves so that they can be better parents, and workshops for parents who have high school students so that they can understand the teenage brain and managing anxiety and time management of their homework. And I'm hoping that that's going to be an effective way to reach parents in a more meaningful way.
So the workforce needs a bit of social-emotional learning. No, big companies are saying, we're seeing a level of emotional distress in our big companies, and how can we address that?
Tony.
Kim.
No, Tony.
I think we're just about to enter into this afternoon's discussion. So I think this is the appropriate point to thank the presenters who did such a marvelous job this morning. So please join me in thanking them all. And especially I'd like to thank the newest neuroscientist in Canada for for his insights and his comments and the engagement that you displayed this morning. It was a wonderful time together, and we're most appreciative. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.